What is up, you cursed cows? Welcome to No Holds Barred. Before we launch in, I'm going to hit you up with the word of the week. This is where we take a word that is Shakespearean, off-putting, confusing, makes you hate Shakespeare when you read it for the first time because you have no idea what he's saying. Break it down, tell you what it means, and then attempt to sneak it past Kevin in whatever way I feel possible during the podcast. This week, the word of the week is Varletto. Varletto, V-A-R-L-E-T-T-O, a noun. It's a mock Italian word for little varlet, rascal, or rogue. I will almost assuredly show myself to be a varletto with my word of the week usage this week. Here we go. Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. This week, we'll silently rejoice, do what we will with Twelfth Night, and remove Shakespeare from our podcast and replace him with poet Audre Lorde, as Penn students did this week when they removed a gigantic portrait of the bard from the central staircase of their English building to, quote, more fully represent the global media that are now studied there, end quote.
Okay.
But first, let's duel. In the duel, we choose three questions at the intersection of Shakespeare and the present day and take 45-ish seconds to hash out the best answer. Kevin won the coin flip before the show and has elected to go second, so Dan, you can kick us off.
Great.
Question number one. The Boston angler Liam Billingham emailed us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com this week. He writes, just walked past a fancy furniture store with the "All the World's a Stage" quote on the window. Hmm. The store was called Dramaturgy. This made me think of this question. If you were going to open a niche store with a Shakespearean name, what would it be and what would be your featured item? Daniel.
Sure. So for a little context, I'm thinking of opening this store probably in our neighborhood here in lovely, gorgeous Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So I would open a store called Apothecary, would sell herbal tinctures and extracts, of course. However, in the back, there would be a portrait of Mantua. If you were to unlock this portrait and open it, it would go through a back door into a speakeasy, which would be a nice place to get your fix on if you were bemoaning your lost love. So you can go there for some nice cocktails made with the tinctures that we sell in the front. It would be a destination, sort of fantastic bar, late night spot, dimly lit and beautiful, and potentially a little lethal.
Oh my. That's actually really good.
Thanks.
I rather than going for romance, I just went back to what always works for me, which is Richard III. one of my favorite lines in Richard III is, I have set my life upon a cast and I will stand the hazard of the die.
Okay.
So I'm going, I don't know where this would be. I feel like this is going to be more out in, not in a city, going to be in a more of a rural area or a suburban area. It's going to be a game store.
All right.
It's called The Hazard of the Die. It's a competitive, a comprehensive hardcore gaming tabletop gaming emporium.
Great.
So you go there for all of your like niche tabletop stuff.
Yeah.
At the Hazard of the Die.
Can you play there as well?
Oh, yeah. It's all there. All the nerds get to come to the Hazard of the Die. And they can all be like, that's actually a Shakespeare reference. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It'll be insufferable.
Roll for that.
Exactly. Question number two. Redditor B. Dice started a thread on the r Shakespeare subreddit this week titled simply Shakespeare Street Fights that is too up our alley not to address. They ask, who would win? Timon, in parens, of Athens.
Oh,
in
that
parens,
Timon.
Versus Julius Caesar. So, I mean, I don't know what this question is coming from, but right? It's fucking Caesar. you know, I know Dan's going to have a lot of insight into what the fighting style of Timon is, so mm-hmm. I'll take the Caesar road and let Dan provide the counterpoint.
Interesting.
You know, Caesar, you know, Timon of Athens is a rich old guy who, like Howard Hughes style, cracks and runs off into the woods, and Caesar is a colossus who doth bestride the narrow world.
Yeah.
I think this is a runaway. I put Caesar at least a 40-1 favorite in this fight.
It's very interesting that you chose 40-1 as a favorite, and I'll tell you why, Kev. I, too, went with Julius Caesar, a la the Battle of Alesia, where Caesar was outnumbered 4-1 and ended up, it was one of his greatest victories. In this battle, he used siege warfare, which is, of course, from the Latin sedare, meaning to sit. So I think Caesar would sit on Timon of Athens, crushing his ribs. He would then use his vant brace to knock the Varletto about his pate.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, he'd go with some standard Roman homoerotic foot fetish moves, mm-hmm. stuffing his feet in Timon's mouth, then crushing his skull with a wrench, thus giving us the first ever usage of wrenching a victory from the jaws of defeat. Thank you.
That's terrible.
Do I have more time? Oh, 45 seconds.
Yeah, that's... Wow. I didn't have to mention one thing about Timon perfectly. Question number three. Finally, Emily Lyon, who is at Lyon_M, followed up on the segment we didn't get to last week regarding Steve Bannon's production of Titus Andronicus. Mm. She writes, which play would you want Steve Bannon to take a stab at instead of stabbing at our country's moral fabric?
Okay. I would go with Measure for Measure.
Okay.
And I think this is because there's a nice mix of the personal and the political. Corruption and greed are at the heart of the play, along with some serious questions about gender relations, I think. I read a little bit about his Coriolanus, mm-hmm. which he modified, and I feel like he might do some fun things with the Measure for Measure text, which I think people who listen to this podcast know is my least favorite of Shakespeare's texts.
Yep.
So I might as well put it with someone like Steve Bannon and see what they can come up with together.
Sure. Worse than Timon?
Worse than Timon.
Mm-hmm.
Timon's one of my favorites.
Is it? What's your favorite? What's your favorite part?
Timon.
Of course.
The part that's in Athens.
Nailed it. Oh, in Athens.
Which Timon are you talking about?
The first one of Athens.
Yeah, yeah.
For Steve Bannon specifically, I think it'd be good to see what his take on Henry VI Part 1 would be, because that play features a ruler who relies heavily on his advisors to lead the nation, which is similar to what I think we're about to see in America. For Henry VI, it's because he's a baby, and for our country, it's because the president is too smart for his daily intelligence briefings.
Right. President-elect.
Quoth the president-elect. It would be useful to see how Bannon handles the delivery of the infighting and all the political maneuvering that's happening backstage, as it were, in the play, just to get an idea of how he pictures his situation going moving forward as, you know, the apprentice, the Oval Office, moves forward.
Oh, God.
2017 and beyond. So there you go, folks. That is how we duel. If you have a question you'd like to see featured in a future edition of The Duel, please send it our way. We are at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/ No Holds Barred. We are on Twitter at No Holds Barredcast, and we are on Facebook at facebook.com/ No Holds Barredcast.
Oh, that one got away from me.
Daniel.
Yes.
Shall we do some homework?
Oh, please.
Mortals, perchance you wonder at this show, but wonder on till truth makes all things plain.
This is the part of the program where I pull a Shakespearean homework question from the internet, and Dan and I do our best to pull together a coherent answer, no matter how stupid the question or how pressing the deadline.
Yes.
This episode's question comes from Redditor AwesomeAmazing411 under the heading, Anyone Willing to Help?
Oh, yeah.
They ask, Shakespeare appended to the main title of Twelfth Night a subtitle, What You Will. What You Will is at least a double entendre, meaning the phrase can be taken at least two different ways. Each of these interpretations sheds a different light on the themes and action of the play. For this assignment, I would like you to do the following.
Subtle.
Determine each of the two meanings inherent in the double entendre. Imagine that you are asked to share each meaning with someone you know, someone who hasn't seen the play, and you need to explain each in some detail.
Yep.
Two, show some places in the action, character, plot, themes, and or overall story of the play that support each of these interpretations. Use specific examples.
Oh, wow.
So, real paraphrase there from Awesome Amazing 411 to get to the bottom of this question about what you will. So, Daniel.
Oh, wow. Yes.
What you have a fondness for this subtitle.
I certainly do. I think it's a super title, honestly.
Oh.
Like that?
That's dumb. You're a dummy.
No, it's great.
So,
whatever you
give
say.
Some of these entendres. There's at least two entendres.
There are at least two.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm actually trying to remember if I blacked out one night and went online and put this up here just so we could answer this question. This is like in my wheeliest of wheelhouses.
Well, if you did, there are no spelling errors, and it is sure formatted like something that came directly from a worksheet from a teacher. So,
well, that's something I would write. That's great. So for me, the two entendres would be what you will, meaning in similar to as you like it, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of sort of raucousness, mm-hmm. misrule, Twelfth Night, which we had talked about on the So You're Going to See episode last week. But more importantly, I think more pressingly, what the title really means is what you desire.
Okay.
What you will.
Like
will meaning
into existence?
Yes. What is it that you want? What do you need? And it's one of the best examples is when Olivia meets Cesario for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
She says, what are you? What would you?
Hmm.
And I think right there's that sense of all of these characters want something desperately.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they willing to do to get it? So those are the two. I think that's much more interesting than the first, Twelfth Night, or what you will, or
right.
whatever.
Right, right, right.
I mean, that makes sense in terms of the comedic structure and the comedic tone of the play.
Yeah, it's about, you know, one of the things that also we discovered during that So You're Going to See episode is that there are a lot of storylines that don't kind of really go anywhere
right.
in Twelfth Night, like how Cesario is going to show up as a eunuch at Orsino's court, and then that's dropped immediately.
Right.
There are a couple of other things like that I'm blanking on right now, that they say they're going to do one thing, and then it's like,
No, we're not going to do that.
I also like the idea that someone, when I was doing a little quick Googling of this question before the episode, someone's like, it's what you will, because they were like, Shakespeare wrote the play, and he's like, what's it called? And he's like, I don't. It's Twelfth Night. And they're like, you're just gonna name it after like opening night. And he's like, "Fuck it, what you will, whatever.
Right.
Doesn't matter. It's an awesome play. You can call
it awesome play.
Shakespeare's dump. There it is.
Awesome play 411.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Good.
But I mean, so the in terms of like the whatever, it's like,
yeah.
I guess that's more of the lower status folks in this play have it, where it's like, you know, yeah, we're gonna get drunk and party on the front lawn at 4 a.m. Whatever.
Yep.
That's what I will.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know,
I think there's also so many characters in the play who want things that they can't have. Orsino wants Olivia. Olivia wants Cesario.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew wants Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
Sebastian wants to be rid of Antonio.
No.
Antonio wants Sebastian. Mariah wants Sir Toby.
Mm.
Sir Toby wants more liquor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody just wants something.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that's, you know.
So there are your two meanings of the entendre. Now show some. Oh, well, I guess we've already done all this. Show some places in the action, character, plot, themes, and/or overall story of the play that supported each of these interpretations. We've given many specific
examples. There is a sonnet. What is really interesting to me is, I don't know if I can pull this up this quickly. There's a sonnet where Shakespeare riffs on the word will.
Oh.
Quite a bit. Yeah, sonnet 135 is a nice, if you want to look at something outside of the play, to look at how Shakespeare employs the word. I mean, he obviously liked his own name.
Sure.
It's not lost, and he writes this whole sonnet, whoever hath her wish, thou hast thy will, and will to boot, and will in over plus. He uses the word will 3 times in the first 2 lines.
Huh.
And I think in that sonnet, it'd be fun for Awesome Amazing 411 to be like, oh, also, I happen to read some sonnets and bring in some other
right.
examples of how Shakespeare uses the word will.
Yeah.
That's how you get like a 6.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's a good one. All right, so why don't we put the structure together on this?
Sure.
So our classic 5 on the AP, 5-paragraph essay.
Yeah. I would punt on the first meaning almost immediately in the paper.
Like
the first meaning is like whatever, but that's not really a very good meaning. It can apply to the misrule.
Right, so that's your first paragraph is like, here's what it is.
Yep.
This does not interest me as an erudite Shakespearean scholar.
Correct.
There are greater things in heaven and earth. end.
Than are dreamt of in this possible paragraph. Essay question. So then going into all the different things the characters desire. Mm-hmm. And I think off the top of our heads, we just ripped off pretty much all of them.
Yes, we did together, cumulatively, rip off all of those.
So, you know, the sea captain, I don't know. Let's figure that one out. He wants calm waters.
What does he want?
He
wants a handy tip. I mean,
I think that's probably it.
He dropped off, you know,
a handy tip
on the shore with he got her dressed and everything, gave her directions. It's like, yes, you know, he's just like sitting there rubbing his palm at the end of that scene, like, you're gonna grease the wheels on this.
Admiral of the fleet, perhaps.
Yeah. Remember me. Remember the porter. Strike. Remember the sea captain.
Tom Sopper could write that play, I think.
Just the sea captain.
Remember the sea captain. It could be good.
Hey, remember the sea captain?
I do, actually.
And then, so what's the third? The third paragraph is
talk about Sonnet 135.
Yeah, will. We
will.
Yeah, then, that's the slam dunk. When no one else in your class is writing about Sonnet 135.
Yeah,
but that's why you take your homework questions and just copy paste them without any input directly onto the Shakespeare subreddit.
Yep.
Get roasted by those dorks. They get so angry.
I love it.
Like a post like this, they get so angry.
I would go check it out if I could really figure out how Reddit works.
And the only way this segment works is that you do not.
That's right.
So this whole podcast comes grinding to a halt if you figure that out. So don't worry about it.
I won't.
Maybe I'll start.
I'm sure it's hard.
I'm sure it requires something. Maybe I'll start pulling like the best, angriest responses.
That'd be great.
At the end. All right. Maybe I'll start doing that.
Here's some of those.
In the meanwhile, shall we do some everyday shake?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is the section of the show where we pull a phrase from Shakespeare and show you how to use it in your everyday conversation. This week's phrase is, "Silence is the perfectest herald of joy," as featured in Act 2, Scene 1 of Much Ado About Nothing. Let's hear the phrase in context. "I have brought Count Claudio, whom you sent me to seek." "Why, how now, Count? Wherefore are you sad?"
"Not sad, my lord."
"How then, sick?"
"Neither, my lord."
"The Count is neither sad, nor sick, nor merry, nor well, but civil, Count, civil as an orange, and something of that jealous complexion. In faith, lady, I think your blazon to be true, though I'll be sworn, if he be so, his conceit is false. Here, Claudio, I have wooed in thy name, and fair hero is won. I have broke with her father, and his good will be obtained. Name the joy of marriage, and God give thee joy."
"Count, take of me my daughter, and with her my fortunes. His grace hath made the match, and grace say amen to it."
"Speak, Count, 'tis your cue."
"Silence is the perfectest herald of joy. I were but little happy if I could say how much. Lady, as you are mine, I am yours. I give away myself for you and dote upon the exchange."
That is "Silence is the perfectest herald of joy."
Perfectest.
Perfectest.
Perfectest. No, this is good.
Is it scan?
This is in prose.
So then no would have been a fine answer. "Silence is the perfectest / perfectest herald of joy." From Much Ado About Nothing. Dan, you want to give us some context? I'm going to go get the pronunciation diction. I'm going to go to the text.
Please do. I'm excited about this. So while Kevin's gone, hi, everybody. It's me. I'm happy to have this time with you. So this is Act 2, Scene 1. Claudio, they've done the mask trick, basically, where the prince has wooed Hero in Claudio's name. But Benedict comes in and is like, "Hey, Claudio, I think the prince is boning your lady." And Claudio is like, "No!" And gets super angry. And then basically comes back in and Claudio... Sorry, I'm looking at Kevin bringing three different dictionaries here.
I have reference material available.
Okay, great. This is going to be fun. And Don Pedro comes in with Hero and is like, "Here you go. I won her for you." And he's just dumbfounded. And they're like, "Are you going to say anything?" And he's like, "Silence is the perfectest herald of joy," because, I mean, to be fair, perfectest isn't a word, but that's the point, is that he is so dumbfounded that he can't speak, which is like some context. What did that book say, Kev?
It was not featured in All the World's a Stage, a complete pronunciation dictionary for the plays of William Shakespeare. Not featured in that one.
All the Words on Stage.
all the words on stage, a complete pronunciation dictionary. And it is also not in the Shakespeare Lexicon and Quotation Dictionary. So we have no answers here.
No, it's perfectist.
It's perfectist.
Okay, great.
It's the Mr. Perfectist Herald of Joy. All right, so you gave us a little context, I heard,
did.
As I was doing my studying. So how can we use this phrase in context?
Well, I feel like...
if you could agree on it, depending on your regional... You know, it's a regionalism. In Massachusetts, we say perfectist.
Interesting. In New Hampshire, we say perfectist, because we are the most perfectist state, bigly, huge state.
By what metric? Anyways.
This is an unprecedented debate we're having here. Well, I think this is a timely usage as someone who has suffered my entire life being a notoriously silent gift receiver that is just like, the more I like a gift, the less I tend to respond to it, because I'm just processing like, oh,
right.
I didn't do enough, or I didn't, like, it's just like, oh.
The Catholic guilt of gift receiving.
That's right.
Right.
Where I'm like, and then people will be like, oh, you didn't like it? You didn't freak out? You didn't scream? And I'm also blessed enough to be part of a family that it's very effusive with their gift receiving.
Yeah.
So I'm the black sheep in that in many ways.
Perfect.
Perfectist.
Perfect.
So, yeah, that's one, I think, where you're just like, you don't like the gift. It's like, no, I love it. Silence is the perfectest herald of joy.
I think this is also in the holiday spirit. I think this is like if you're hosting a gigantic holiday party, you have your family, you have your friends over, you have 30 people crammed into your house with all the leaves and the table, and like you are absolutely at max capacity. You've spent all day making a huge meal, and finally it's all out, and everybody start that moment where everybody's eating, and you just hear the clink of the silverware. Like nobody's talking anymore. You
right.
just have the clink of the silverware on the on the table, and the just that silence of satisfied eating.
Yep.
That silence is the perfectest herald of joy.
As someone who sees a decent number of plays and typically always sees plays with my very judgy, frowny face on, even when I'm liking it, just staring like I couldn't be in a worse place right now, which is often not how I feel at all.
Mm-hmm.
But people who, are, if I know them and are in the show, who afterwards will see like, you appeared to be miserable. And I was like, no. Just processing. Mm-hmm. Silence is the perfectest herald of joy.
Nice. I like it. I like the way that sounds. Maybe we'll go with the way you pronounce it. For those of you who are new parents of newborns or toddlers, you've been staying up all night trying to get your baby to fall asleep. They just won't stay down. And then finally, in your moment of utmost crisis, there's that silence as the baby nods off. And that silence is the perfectest herald of joy.
What if you were so sure that you were right about something that you went out and got like 3 books to look it up,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't find anything, so mm-hmm. your response was just to be silent and say, you know what, I could tell you that, Dan, you're right, but instead I just won't say anything. I'll just go with silence is the perfectest herald of joy.
I don't really work in fictional hypotheticals.
Okay.
So
that's interesting, perhaps. Based on this podcast.
Anyways, that is silence is the perfectest herald of joy. Use it in your everyday conversation. Let us know how it goes.
Oh, good.
All right, let's bring this thing home.
Yes.
Plugs, corrections, banter, word of the week, Daniel.
Yes. So for the banter this week, I have something. We have loyal listener and friend of the podcast, Travis Bedard, who is at Travis Bedard, BEDARD, on Twitter, recently was hospitalized.
Oh, no.
He was an active tweeter with us, and he was in the hospital for about 11 days, was in a coma for much of it, and then came out of this coma, is doing well now, on the road to recovery, so we're all sending him love. Feel free to tweet some love at him from us. But he endeared himself to my heart and our heart, I think, with this tweet. His first tweet when he got back was, quote, in my defense, I was dead at the time, which is just the kind of sick humor that endears him to us.
Uh-huh.
So I'd like to nominate Travis to be the first ever recipient of the No Holds Barred Hermione Award.
Okay.
For resistance. For resilience.
Well.
And both.
That makes a little more sense. Resistance,
I mean, she was gone
death.
For 18 years. Travis, a couple days. Good to have you back, buddy.
Good to have you back. How am I supposed to follow that up?
I don't know.
Well,
silence is the perfectest herald of joy.
Nick Nelson, who is at Atonalist on Twitter, tweeted us regarding holiday gifts this week to write, when I was in high school, my Nana got me a t-shirt that read, William Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare's plays. Boy.
Teddy.
That is a t-shirt that I think we all would have worn in high school. And boy, should we have gotten some swirlies from that. Yeah,
probably
that
did.
That is a swirly-inducing t-shirt. And my favorite, I used to have when I was in college, I was actually at South Station in Boston with the Boston angler, Liam Billingham, on a bus back to New York. And I had a t-shirt that was just Shakespeare's head, and it said, prose before hose.
Yep. And, remember that shirt.
Yeah. And we're standing there in line, just like whatever, and there was this hipster, smug kid standing in front of us. We were probably like 22, and he was like 18. And he turned and goes, cool shirt. Too bad Shakespeare didn't write in prose.
Oh, did you punch him?
Oh, we lit him up. And Liam, of course, in his charming way, was like, yes, he absolutely did.
Of course.
And then just like talked to the kid for like 5 minutes until the kid like literally put his headphones in and turned around. And it's like,
Liam did a documentary on this kid. Speaking of Shakespeare gifts, came in handy today. ILoveShakespeare.com. Friend of the pod, Will Sutton, has put together that book of sonnets.
Oh, yeah.
Sonnet 135 was featured today. You can get his book. His book is incredible. It's a great Shakespeare gift. If you're looking, if you one last minute stocking stuffer, if you got all the gifts on our previous episode, need one more, check out ILoveShakespeare.com for his book of sonnets.
Do you know, is it called the book of sonnets?
It's right on there. It's okay. Just basically buy. It's
that's his
all book. The sonnets and you buy it. It's really great.
That's awesome. Nick Nelson also tweeted us about the dual question we had a few weeks ago about who he would have in our Shakespeare cabinets. He tweets, at No Holds Barredcast has no respect for civilian control of military, as neither Othello nor Henry V can serve without waiver. Of course, Nick, we're talking about the American cabinet, so they would be immigrants here. We are not talking about the Venetian cabinet or the English cabinet.
I see.
And as Americans, they could serve in the cabinet.
That's right. Absolutely. I was happy to see B. West Cineast appear in my notifications again this week. It's been a while. So just wanted to give a shout out to B. West Cineast and the crew and say, where are you at? Where are the question? Where did it happen? What happened?
I believe she's literally in graduate school for like engineering right now.
Yes. So you need to listen to a podcast?
Yes.
More than ever?
But I think more than ever.
Now more than ever. Holiday break. Get at us, B. West Cineast. We miss your questions.
And then in the most exciting development of the week, it's a Christmas miracle. Skylar Collins.
Yes!
Is back.
Yes!
Skylar wrote like a 2,000-word email.
Oh, good.
That I'm not going to read all of because it's very long.
Can you forward it to me?
Sure.
Great.
Skylar writes, hi, Kevin. I hope your year is coming to an excellent close and your party was full of holiday humors. I'm still hoping for a Shakespeare softball team episode and, of course, for an episode putting the authorship question on trial, but the last episodes have been as entertaining as ever. Now, Dan, my swine, and most furrowed concubine.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I have taken your recent episode titles, When They Seldom Come They Wished For Come, Sweet Are the Uses of Adversity, and The Readiness Is All, that you have sorely missed me. But to the point, now that you have finally said something substantial after merely providing prattle to Kevin's scholarship for years, which he has a point, I must take issue with it.
Oh, good.
Regarding Rosalind and Orlando's courtship, I agree with you that if one had to pick between Orlando knowing Ganymede's identity from the start against him finding out in the final scene, the latter would be the superior pick.
Yes.
However, I think that a middle path is best, that Orlando has occasional suspicions of Ganymede's identity, but Rosalind is so able to change her tactics so as to throw him off the scent.
Mm-hmm.
I admit that the textual evidence for this is rickety at best and depends largely on a guided interpretation and potential staging, but as with Orlando's suspicions, it gets stronger as the game goes, and I find potential additional chemistry exciting. At this point, there's like 2 pages of
great
references. Very well documented.
Wonderful.
I'm not reading it all.
I need not hear any more.
This is the more foundational half of my interpretation, which, as I noted, is a little unreliable and depends as a focused interpretation rather than a Scalia-esque reading. But I think it has the potential to play much better with shifting power balances and much higher stakes. Eat your heart out, Or if not, I'll have it in the marketplace. Yours, Skylar Collins.
Well, it's nice to hear from Skylar. I thought that maybe Skylar had ended his days after getting lit up by my incredible
Louise.
Sonnet.
And as a subscriber, I hope you mean.
Right. Of course. Now, I do appreciate very much, and I have to say I'm not surprised at all that Skylar Collins would be advocating for making a beige vanilla down the middle choice.
Oh, no.
Bold actors make bold choices, Skylar. So arguing to make a middle of the road choice and then providing an essay. Is that essay the director's note? Is that how you do that show? So that the audience knows what the hell you're doing? Now, unfortunately for you, Skylar, you'll never get the chance to play Benedict, so it doesn't really matter. Who are we talking about? Benedict? No.
Nope.
Orlando. Screw you, Skylar.
Oh, and you can't stick the dismount. That's going to come off some points, just like on the one leg.
You can fix that, right? You fix that in post?
You did the little hop off the uneven bars.
Shit! Fuck you, Skylar!
Now that we've told
Well, you won't play Benedict either. Well, or Orlando.
Go fish. There you go. Well, no.
Strikes me as more of like a LeBeau.
On the heels of telling one of our more devoted listeners to fuck off, in case you missed it, our Patreon is live. At patreon.com/noholdsbarred. That's available to anyone who enjoys the podcast and has the means and the interest in supporting us as we try to grow the show, whether by improving our equipment, doing a little more advertising, telling less of our listeners to f*** off, or expanding the kind of programming that we do. As a thank you for supporting the show, we have a special little holiday thing going on. If you pledge $10 before December 25th, which is this week, Dan and I will send you a customized personal 12th night card. It's like a holiday card, but we're Shakespeare dorks, so it comes on 12th night, January 6th. Featuring Dan and I, we're going to send little sniping notes back and forth to each other on a card that only you will have. It will be a collectible or garbage, depending on the future of this podcast.
Collectible.
But it will be just for you. What better way to get into the holiday spirit than with us sniping at each other in writing? And you can do that at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. We also want to give a thank to our latest donors, Val Harper and Jennifer Porter. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
And for all of our donors who have given so far, tweet at us about what your favorite play is when you have a moment so we can customize your card even further.
Yeah. Very exciting. I hope Skylar does one. I really want to send him some mail.
I don't think he wants you to have his address.
That's fair.
What else you got?
I have an interesting thing that's happening. I just deleted it. There it is. The Shakespeare Theater Company Bard Association is doing an annual dinner and mock trial, which is actually presided over by Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah.
And is based on this year they're doing one in June, based on a scenario from William Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Oh.
Now, you did mock trial in high school, right?
Yes.
So did I. Not surprising.
Not surprised at all.
I would have loved to have done, like, as they've done in the past, like Romeo and Juliet, like going to trial. Like, that seems like a great idea. And I'm interested in maybe heading down to D.C. to see one of these.
Yeah, when is it?
June 19th.
And then we can steal the idea and bring it on the podcast.
That's correct.
Send us ideas. All right. If this appeals to you, send us ideas for what trials you think. Who would be the prosecuting attorney and who would be the defense attorney?
I think I would be the defense attorney because all I need to do is get reasonable doubt. And I feel like you would just come after, like,
Dan Boley, a reasonable doubt at a reasonable price.
That's right.
And I'll be Perry Mason. That's fine.
There you go.
Make everyone break down on the stand. Hand down.
My defendants get acquitted from the hit musical
Chicago?
Buddy the Elf.
Oh. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. Follow us on Twitter at noholdsbardcast or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So, on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, oh, shoot. We forgot to remove Shakespeare from his place here because of the scope of global media.
Oh, darn.
Ah, well, guess we're stuck with him. Anyways, we'll try harder next time. Till then, my name is Kevin.
Je suis moi. Merry Christmas. Happy fa-la-la.